following presentation, Géant, Connecting Scientists Across the Globe, was given by Catherine Sturver of Dante at Network Shop 42 in April 2014.
Good afternoon, and thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to speak here at the Janet Network Shop. I'm very pleased to speak to you because you seem to be the audience that is interested in international connectivity, and that of course is something that I've done for the last 15 years in the context of Géant. And just for you quickly, what is Géant? When I talk Géant fluently here, Géant of course is the European Research and Education Network, which interconnects 40 Janet-like organizations across the European Union, but reaching 40 countries, obviously also further out the European Union. It's very high-speed networks. We have up to, well, we have 100 gig capacity between all of the main sites. It's fully resilient. But I'm not actually here to talk about Géant, but I just wanted to give you the European view, how Janet is connected into the European research and education networking space. But really why I'm here is to talk about how that then extends into the global, what I call research and education networking fabric, which we see developing across the globe. So this is just, you know, this is my favorite map. It's been called the spaghetti map, and I think that's probably quite good. If you've seen this map in former times, these spaghettis coming out of Europe, they are growing organically and they're growing over the years. But it gives you a very quick overview of how the Géant network, and with that, you as users of Janet, are connected internationally, and that is not any IP connectivity, but this is dedicated, organized research and education networking connectivity, where at the other end is a Janet-like organization receiving the traffic. And by that, we also, of course, can engineer the traffic around the world, as Josh was saying earlier. So I'm going to take you now on a tour de force, really around the world, and show you what this capacity that we have across the world. And I'm not going to talk much about funding, because I'm not going to talk about funding management and the contractual sides, even though I have to say that's probably my headache on a daily basis. You know, trying to procure connectivity in Namibia is probably equally of a challenge as connectivity in Malaysia. But what I want to make a statement is that, you know, this connectivity is in most parts very generally supported by the European Commission. In the developing world, these are development aid projects, because the Géant model in Europe is seen as a model that is adaptable quite nicely to developing markets. And it is very clear in the European Commission development aid functions that ICT is necessary for development, ICT is necessary for the reaching of the Millennium Development Goals. And therefore, they have actually quite nicely invested into research and education networking, because they see that as a way and means to bring ICT development into developing world markets. For the development aid projects, we receive actually up to 80% funding from the European Commission, and that is normally in the area of around 15 million euros over 4 years' time for a developing region. The management of this is a small team in Dante. We are just 2 full-time people and 2 part-time people. But we are a very expert team. Well, most of us have been in Dante for at least 10 to 12 years, so we've done this basically all our adult life. And this presentation is, of course, joint work. Well, I came here thinking, well, what is really interesting to people in Janet? Well, obviously, North America should probably be on top here. We have long-standing relationships with the major American networks, such as Canary in Canada, but also ESnet, which is the Energy Science Network in the United States, Internet2, which connects the universities across the USA, and the NASA network of NISN. Our transatlantic capacity today is 60 gigabits per second for IP traffic, and we have 20 gigabits for point-to-point connectivity. And this is funded really reciprocally between Europe and the Americans. So we bring in a link, they bring in a link, we bring in a link, they bring in a link, rather than, you know, going through. We implement this in a resilient, open, transparent way. We do not buy from the same providers. We have other people aware, or other partner aware tendering processes together with our American partners to ensure that Not everybody is on the same link to the United States, but there are various links being used, resilient usage of links. And we also have various landing points, both in the United States and in Europe, to ensure that this is really a very robust network. We also work with our American partners, of course, beyond capacity, saying, well, you know, it is also appreciated by the users that they have a common service experience, whether they are in a US university or a European university. Asia Pacific, obviously quite interesting. You see here the TAIN network. The TAIN network today is managed by the TAIN Star Corporation based in Korea. It was previously managed by Dante. We have in the development aid projects, we have the aim to transfer ownership from Dante to our regional partner as early as the partner is ready to accept that ownership. And as you can see, the TAIN network is really quite extensive. It's probably the biggest network that Dante has ever built, because obviously the Asian Pacific region is much bigger than Europe, but also because we reach a lot more people in that, and we estimate that we probably reach about 50 to 60 million people through the TAIN network, which really spans from the smallest country like Bhutan to Australia. And we've already heard a very nice testimony from Yasser about the Orion Plus circuit. I'm very glad it delivers to your expectation. We have implemented direct Chinese-European connectivity since 2007. And we are now in the second phase of it, which lasts until December 2014. But rest assured, we're already talking about the future. And this is, again, a project which receives some generous support from the European Union, but is also co-funded by the European networks. At this point in time, we have procured the link, and it is a 10 gigabit link. We upgraded in January 2013 to 10 gigabit. And I have to add now the TNE as a major application. Others that you compete with the traffic is astrophysics, meteorology, genomics, and radio astronomy. And the last paragraph I don't have to repeat, because we've just heard from Yasser. But this is a strategic relationship that has been established between the JEAN partners, among them Janet, of course, and the Chinese partners. And it is here to stay. I think we can very safely say it is here to stay. Relationships with the Chinese partners are not always, you know, straightforward. Every time you speak about very, you know, large amounts of money that are necessary for these sort of links, obviously, you know, a lot of interest is there, self-interest, national interest, all these sort of interests. But I think, in general, I can say that the collaboration is very forthcoming and very straightforward and absolutely goal-oriented. The goal is to have direct links between China and Europe. This slide just really gives you an overview of the connectivity to the other major Asian RNE networks, such as in Australia. We are connected via an STM4, so 622 megabits, via TAIN, the TAIN hub in Singapore, to Australia. But we also receive 10 gigabits via the US, thanks to the Australian and also the Japanese partners. As we said before, the Chinese links is now at 10 gigabit per second. And we have, for this Orion Plus circuit, I should actually say, we have signed an agreement with our US partners to ensure that should our link between Europe and China break down, the connectivity is backed up the other way around via the United States. And equally, if the US connectivity breaks down to China, they back up via Europe. So we actually have a resilient ring, which is probably the first one of its kind, connecting China, Europe, and America back to China. We have 2.5 gigs to Japan via the TAIN network, again via our hub in Hong Kong. And again, a 10 gig link via the United States. And of course, if you hear about these, there's links via the United States, direct links via TAIN, you can imagine the funding and contractual arrangements that need to be assured between Japanese, US, European partners, the European Commission as part of it. So all this sounds really good, but it is the work of many years. And for me, it is very important to understand how you're making use of these links, because every time I hear about from a user that this link is appreciated and needed. That is justification for me when I go to Brussels. We have a 2.5 gig link to Korea. Malaysia, we've heard from Jason before. The EduCity campuses obviously have a bigger necessity of capacity than we can currently offer in the context of TAIN. We are upgrading this our link to STM4. I think you need to bear us in mind for your future steps, but I think I can agree with you that we're not there yet. And we're not there yet, not because we don't want to be there, but as Jason says, connectivity is extremely expensive. Myron is one of those partners as a network. They are still growing, fairly young research and education network on a national scale, limited in manpower, all sorts of limitations that one can imagine, but I'm certain that this will continue to grow. Pakistan, we have connectivity via TAIN at the moment, which is also going to be upgraded to an STM4. And to Singapore, we have a 2.5 gig link. Well, I'm stopping the tour de force at the moment just to get you away from countries into users. So what are the users that we are aware of? Well, obviously the LHC, Big Science, makes use of these networks. Radio Astronomy is one of our biggest partners and users. But we also support e-health and medical science, genomics mainly, genomic database access. And as we heard before, e-learning and T&E in general. And then there's a big emphasis on telemedicine, of course, specifically with Asian partners, but also increasingly with African and Latin American partners. Earth observation, we do a lot of environmental monitoring, specifically in the Asian Pacific regions through sensor networks that have been installed after the tsunami in 2006. But we also support the arts, and that is something that we're always quite fond of, that these networks are not only used for the very, you know, hard science and all these good things, but also actually, you know, for human interaction, human collaboration in the arts and humanities. Right, now I take you back into the world, go to Central Asia. We connect through the CARIN project, which is again one of those projects funded by the European Commission under development aid. We connect Kazakhstan, Kyrgyzstan, Tajikistan, and Turkmenistan. And these countries are either connected through GEANT, when, well, Central Asia is, of course, Central Asia because it is in Central Asia. So when you procure for connectivity there, it actually turned out that bringing Tajikistan and Turkmenistan to Singapore and from Singapore on the TAIN network back to Europe was much cheaper and much more cost effective than trying to bring them directly to Europe. So we have sort of split the traffic here, and some of the networks connect to Singapore, other networks connect to GEANT in Frankfurt. And I think that just reinforces the message that I want to make, that this is a fabric of R&E networking that interworks through backup agreements, through agreements of transiting traffic, and it's actually quite a nice way. Very recently, we have upgraded our formerly satellite link to Afghanistan. We're now connecting Afghanistan, and these are 16 university sites in Afghanistan at an STM1 in Vienna. And this is not an EC-funded project, but a NATO-funded project, which is an sort of historic NATO interest in Afghanistan, and it's funded through the Silk Afghanistan project there. Latin America. Latin America is probably one of the first development aid successes that we had back in 2003. I built the network there connecting the 13 Latin American NRENs. At the time, we actually only had 4 NRENs. So what happens is that also we build NRENs on the way, GENET-like organizations on the way, because they realize that something is going here and the universities want to be part of that. So we are now reaching 13 Latin American countries. Our main partner obviously here is Brazil. Brazil takes a lot of the traffic, but also Mexico, Colombia, Chile, Argentina, and less so than the Central American countries. We have a 2.5 gigabit link, which we are upgrading to 5 gigabit in May. And what is also very interesting in Latin America is really how Europe extends services into other areas. So if you are if you happen to be in Latin America and you come with your EduRome access, it's very likely that you will have EduRome in the university that you're visiting. The Caribbean is another fairly recent project. We have established connectivity to the GEAPOP in Paris last year at STM1. This network connects 26 Caribbean islands, and that is an achievement for the Caribbean in itself, to be able to organize themselves. You know, in every island only has one university, and that university has maybe two or three campuses on different sort of little islands. It's a challenge to get that connectivity up and going, but the engineer who actually worked with me on the building of the Latin American network, his skills were then transferred into the Caribbean, and he very much enjoyed a three-year stint in Bahamas working on behalf of the Brazilian NREN to build up this Caribbean network. And what was really nice when we did the launch event in Trinidad in 2013, we had a steel drum masterclass from a university in London. The master was in Trinidad. No, it's wrong. The master was in Chicago, so we worked with our American partners as well. And the students were in the university in London and in Trinidad. And they were playing, and then the master in Chicago was saying, well, you do this well, but I would do it this way. And just to be able to share music shows how very good these network connections work, because the musician's ear is much better adapted to any sort of delay than I am. And if they can hear, if they do not hear the delay, you know that you've achieved something. North Africa and the Middle East. This is a network, it's a regional network since 2004, but it has seriously suffered from the Arab Spring. We used to have connectivity to all of the North African countries. We used to have connectivity to Syria. All this has, for obvious reasons, broken down. We currently only connect Algeria at an STM4, and we connect Egypt. But we're trying to get back the track back, and this is where, you know, RNE networking suffers a little bit, because most research and education networks on a national basis are in one way or another dependent on their government, and if the government falls, you know, they have then different issues from, you know, bringing up an RNE network. So we're working with our partners in Morocco, Tunisia, Jordan and Palestine to bring the connectivity back up and running. We have been able to create an Arab States Research and Education Network, which is a regional network covering North Africa and the Near East. And they are very engaged, very active. They want, as a regional network, to add value to the region. And I think that it always depends on how politics goes and how, you know, the dynamics there work. But I'm fairly certain that we will be able to reestablish our connectivity, and I'm certainly also certain that we will be able to reestablish the networks in the country as such, because one of the experiences is that if you once had good connectivity, you do not then afterwards want anything less anymore. So I think that's going to be quite positive. We're working with Janet to support also the campuses that you build, your universities are building in the Emirates, and that, of course, through the Emirates NREN Ankabut. Last, Sub-Saharan Africa. This is my newest pet project, really, I have to call it. This is the UbuntuNet Alliance, which is our regional partner there in Southern and Eastern Africa. Today we reach Kenya, Mozambique, Tanzania, South Africa, Sudan, and Zambia. All these countries have working research and education networks. All these countries connect nationally various universities in their country. We have also now in March, just recently, finally brought connectivity to Mozambique, Rwanda, Uganda, and also reinforced the ring here to Mozambique and Tanzania and Kenya, basically giving backup and resilience to the network. And establishing regional networks in Europe is one thing, doing it in one world region is another thing, but doing it in sub-Saharan Africa, where nobody's ever even attempted or thought about doing something like that, is a very time-consuming effort. It's very rewarding as well if you finally get it going. And we are now running a procurement for the Congo, Malawi, Namibia, and Zambia. And just the fact that we've been able to negotiate with providers in these countries under European procurement rules, European public procurement rules as development aid requires it, is actually quite a success story in itself. And we're very certain that these countries will be very soon connected to the UbuntuNet network. West Africa is currently not yet funded. We are negotiating with the European Commission a new funding envelope, which will start in 2015. Which will then, for the first time, bring R&E connectivity to West Africa. But there's only very few countries at this point in time, like Senegal, Cote d'Ivoire, that are actually having R&E networks on the ground in their country. So, we're the best connected network in the world. Apart from the 40 countries we reach in Europe, we reach another 65 outside of Europe, which makes over 100 countries in the world, which is more than 60%, I think, of world countries, depending on how you count them. This is very good. We want you to make use of it. We want you to tell us about it. Tell me, tell Josh, whoever is closest to you. But it's very important to us to understand really how these are used. And talking about usage, just quickly, this is a monthly average global traffic from Janet in 2012 as compared to 2013. And you see that there's a lot of North America, a lot of Asia Pacific. You have to work on your connectivity to your needs in Africa and the Middle East, Latin America and the Caribbean, but your Spanish counter and Spanish and Portuguese are filling the pipe there. So this is quite a normal sort of overview. This is traffic from Janet to Janet. This is quite more interesting. These are the traffic peaks, and here you see that Janet alone can fill very nicely many of our pipes, which is very good. Luckily, the European networks that are making use of this are not peaking at the same time normally, so we very rarely encounter moments when the networks are saturated, and if they are, of course, we will then work very hard with our partners to improve the connectivity. So this is just everything. So as I said before, we're interested to understand how this global connectivity is used. We need the information also to justify every time we're speaking to funders. We also need the information to talk to providers, really, to make sure that the provider never sees us as a competitor, but rather, you know, somebody that works in a very closed environment, doesn't compete with a big market, but really is, you know, for research and education purposes. IRC at Dante will reach my team, but I think I'd prefer if, you know, we go in the communication via Josh. But in any way, if you're interested in this and you want to have more information, check out our global website on the GEANT website, and you've got that there. And with that, 1 minute.
Thank you very much.
Thank you,
Tim. Sorry to rush you at the end. We've got 1 minute left for any questions for Catherine about GEANT Global Connectivity. Oh, one just behind you there, Stuart.
This was a question which I did have lined up for Josh, but which I think perhaps is your talk kind of half answered it. And it was about the Orient Plus link. And I wondered why we didn't route all traffic to Chinese partner universities over that link, whether it was politics or capacity. Your graphs indicate that it's not capacity. So then the question is, why don't we?
I think that's actually a question for Josh.
there isn't capacity issues on the link from Beijing to London. The problem is in China, and every university has got one CERNET connection, another ISP's connection. And frequently, I think a lot of small universities have low CERNET capacity. So there probably an ISP connection is slightly cheaper. And they don't really guarantee you, they give you default route. And so university prefer just send traffic, international traffic through the ISP's link. Yes, so that's cost problem. So the, what our users experience is the main problem.
Okay. I mean, the way we structure our traffic in Europe, that we say anything that comes out of a university or student accommodation is class, research and education traffic. In very many countries across the world, that you know, they would see this as libertarian sort of approach, and they have much stricter rules. For example, which of the parts of the campus, which department on campus gets the access to the R&E network, and which part does not. And that is different in country to country, and it causes the problems that Bayou has just been.
Yeah, and probably I like to emphasize a bit more is if a university talking to another Chinese university, the best bit is start talking to them, ask them to have sufficient CERNET capacity, route traffic over CERNET. Yeah, that's it.
Thank you, Bayou. Okay, I think we've run out of time, but if you'd, I've got some notes, but please join me in thanking Catherine before she steps away. Thank you.
This recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.